He's pulled the shirt on, scored the goals. Andy Campbell on the red.
This is the red.
Well, we're here once again. It is Andy Campbell live on the red across Teesside on Facebook Live. Get your comments in on Facebook Live, please. With special get DAB radio across Teesside, smart speakers, online apps around the world, and with a special guest. I'm going to embarrass him again. He's sick of this. I roll this out every time. This man sitting opposite you was my absolute idol and hero. I wanted to be Jim Platt when I was a young lad supporting
the body. You told me each week.
Do I tell you each week?
You tell me each week, Jimmy. See, Jimmy tells me every week. You don't need to be embarrassed because you're in. He does it without when you're not here.
I give you the big build-up every time. The big build-up every time. Welcome to Andy's show. It is Andy's show, but delighted you're with us.
Thank you.
Jim Platt, if you hadn't guessed, hadn't heard those Northern Irish tones, or seen the man in the flesh, Jim Platt with Andy Campbell tonight, and taking your calls, 0330-043-2002. That's 0330-043-2002. If you'd like to call the lads and chew the fat over Borough, Riley McGree's injury, whatever's going on, internationals. Nah, maybe not.
No,
Andy, it's all yours, mate.
Yeah, let's give that a miss. Listen, I don't think we're as positive as we were last week. I think the weekend's left a little bit of a damp taste, Jim. Would you agree?
Yeah, I thought Blackburn were a poor team, and those are the teams that we should be beating.
Isn't that the story of the season, though, Jim? That we've spoke on here every single Thursday about those kind of teams and the teams in behind us fighting against relegation, that we can't seem to break them down. We seem to be easily to play against because they frustrate us and hit us on the break, and they damage us, really. In all fairness.
Yeah, we don't seem to damage them so much,
yeah.
And we haven't got the firepower up front. I feel that should damage them. I thought Blackburn were a very ordinary team, and their position in the league shows it. Rotherham took 4 points off us. Sheffield Wednesday coming up shortly, you know.
Yeah, and we spoke about our position in the league in terms of when we played against the bottom three sides, probably the bottom seven sides now, that we're fighting a battle against ourselves in order to get the points that we should be getting on the board, you know, that forget the Leicester Cities and the Leeds Uniteds and the Ipswiches and the Southamptons, because for me they're bonus games, you know what I mean? You get your bread and butter points throughout the season, you can cement a playoff place, you can cement a promotion challenge, but if you don't do the basics right, start games right, you know what I mean? We're talking here week in, week out about home games, especially having tempo, having desire. Blackburn started slow, and you can't turn that around, especially when fans are getting frustrated and anxious and angry and they're starting to have a few negative comments about players.
On the plus point, Andy, we've kept three clean sheets.
Yeah, it looks brilliant. Why is that though, Jim? Because obviously being an ex-goalkeeper yourself, why do we look better? Why do we look more solid?
Well, he's changed the system, hasn't he? McNair's come in, Clark have come in, and the main thing for me, he's kept the same team.
Yeah.
I mean, Vandenberg was out injured on Saturday, but previously that, and he kept the same team, and it was 10 of the same team. And I'm a great believer in you play your best team week in, week out. And of course, Deng has come back in goals, and I feel Deng's a better goalkeeper than Glover, although I think Glover did well, very well, but I think Deng's a better goalkeeper. He looks more solid than Glover.
Talk about the shape, Jim. You talked about the change of shape, so a back three. How important it is for a goalkeeper behind to have a solid unit ahead of you?
Well, it's important that you know the people in front of you and you know their strengths. If you don't know the strengths and they're chopping and changing every week, and you think that Paddy McNair, for example, is going to go and get that one, and you take up a position in relation to the ball, but then if Paddy McNair is not playing, somebody else is playing, and then you take up another position. It's vitally important to have a solid defence. And then you build up from the back, and that's what we've done the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, and I totally agree, and I think it's important that when we do have that three, you call it a three, call it a five, depending on how you want to look at it. When you've got somebody like Paddy, I know obviously you're a big fan of Paddy, obviously because of his country and where he's from, etc. But I've followed him through when he was at United, when he was at Sunderland. You know what I mean? That he can be very versatile. He can play out from the back. He can step into midfield. And I think when you've got a player like that playing as a back three, it gives you that option to step out and play and then drop back into that position. But when you've got a back four, you can't really step out because you leave a too big a gap. And I think too many times this season we have been punished when we've had players stepping out to play.
Well, up until the last three matches, we had been conceding two goals every match, Andy, and it's impossible to win matches if you're in two goals every match.
It is this year. Last year, I think we coped.
Last year we scored a lot of goals, and we had the players to score a lot of goals. Yeah. But this year we've been conceding a lot of goals, mainly two goals per match. And as I say, it's very difficult to win matches if you're in two goals. The last 3 weeks we haven't.
Mm. And we've spoke to you, haven't we, about how sloppy we seem to start games. You know what I mean? Listen, the three previous before Blackburn have been brilliant. We've looked more solid at the back. I've been asking for it all season. I've been using the Karanka style tactic in terms of I like clean sheets. We need to build that kind of foundation. I didn't like the kind of attacking prowess what Aitor brought, but I like the foundation in terms of defensive unit. If we can combine our defensive form that we're currently getting and try and be a bit more expansive going forward, you know, I mean, I think fans will buy into that. But at the minute, the balance just doesn't seem to have both involved in it for whatever reason.
No, if you look where our goals are going to come from, it's difficult to see where they're going to come from. Yeah. I mean, Jones doesn't score many. Housen doesn't score many. Latila has scored a few. The midfield don't score enough goals. I mean, last season we had, obviously, Akpom scored a lot of goals. Yeah. Archer scored a lot of goals. Yeah. Force, who I've forgotten about, does score goals. But we haven't enough people to score goals. Haven't enough creative midfielders as well.
I think that's key for me, Jim, that we talk about creativity. You know what I mean? We cry out for that number 10. You know, I was talking to a couple of lads at work about Lee Tomlin, you know what I mean, about that kind of creativity who can get you a goal but open a door. Riley's got that in his locker, but he's not fit enough. He's picked up another, by the sounds of it, a serious injury. We had Giles last season. You had Isaiah Jones going down the other wing. You had Archer. We had so much creativity along with the goals, but from various places. You know what I mean? We were good on set pieces. It's just, for whatever reason, the tides have turned and we look a little bit more defensive. We look a little bit more solid. We keep the ball, but we don't seem to go anywhere. Fans are getting frustrated because games are probably dying off about the 60th, 70th minute mark, because Blackburn, I think they knew after 70 minutes that it was going to be 0-0. Yes, we had a good chance, probably should have scored it, you know what I mean? But we're not creating enough chances in order to score. We're creating one or two, and we have to score those chances. Where last year we'd create 5, 6, 7 and still score 1, 2, 3. And it seemed to be a little bit more simple. Yeah.
We had the players to score the goals as well, Andy. I mean, Akpom was on fire last season. Archer was a good player last season.
Very good.
Giles created a lot down the left. Jones, I think Jones is a bit hit and miss, but he's got that pace and he frightens people. His final pass leaves a lot to be desired. But we had Force, who scored double figures last season. We scored a lot of goals last season, but we had the players to score.
Yeah. But we spoke, obviously, we had a horrific start of the season, didn't we, in terms of defeats, the amount of goals we were letting in, etc. Just we looked a shadow of ourselves from the previous season. I think the hangover from the Coventry game didn't help in the playoffs. But how important is it to start seasons right and give yourself the best platform and the best opportunity to be successful?
Well, you know, we were one of the favourites, Andy.
Rightly so, because we finished the season really strong. I won't mention the Coventry game because I've gone on about far too many times. It's still depressing. But it killed the whole mood, didn't it, at the start?
Yeah, we were one of the bookies' favourites.
We were second favourite. One bookie had his second favourite.
Yeah. And that soon disappeared after about half a dozen matches. We just haven't got the personnel. I mean, we had so many players on loan last season, and the players on loan did really, really well for us.
Yeah, they did.
But they go back to their own club, and then we're left to patch it up. And Akpom, you know, how do you replace somebody who scored nearly 30 goals a season?
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? I looked at the model last year and looked at the philosophy of the football club, and we had a lot of loan players. We filled in the holes correctly, in my opinion, but loan players weren't the answer. They were the answer for that season, but then two of them went to win the World Cup with under-21s, got Premier League moves. Akpom goes and signs for one of the best clubs in the world over the history. You know, Giles moves to the Premier League. It was so nice to see those players who've wore that red shirt go and do well for themselves, but it left a huge hole in terms of void that we had to fill in so many areas, and we didn't fill them in enough time. We left it after the second game to sign a couple of players. They weren't fit, they weren't sharp, they weren't ready for English football. They weren't probably fit enough for English football, and we got caught out quite a lot. And it must be so difficult for those kind of players to come in at that difficult time.
Yeah, the players we signed were not well-known players.
Yeah,
and I mean nobody knew the Danish lad Vanderberg and Engel. Nobody knew anything about them. Both of them have done quite well, by the way. I think they've got better as the season's gone on, but nobody knew them. Lottie Latt, nobody knew anything about him. And they weren't recognised championship players, whereas last year the lads that we got in from Aston Villa in particular were good championship players.
How key is that, Jim? How key is it that they're ready and they know about the championship? Because we've seen a lot of championship football. How different is it, and how ruthless is it really?
Well, I mean, to me there's a massive difference between the Premiership and the Championship now, and it's got wider. And the last few years the three teams that have gone up near enough come down, and the three teams that have gone down go back up again, and it's going to be the same this year. Probably two, maybe three of them will come down, and also at the top of our league you've got the three that went down last season. So it's a massive difference. I mean, people talking about us because we've had a reasonably good run, they say, oh, we've got a chance of being in the playoffs if we win the next three or four matches. To me, we've got no chance of being in the playoffs. And even if
we haven't done that all season. No, we haven't been consistent at all. So why would we start now?
And we haven't been good enough yet, David, to be honest. I mean, there's four teams have gone, and there's only two places to fight for the playoffs. We're certainly not one of the two teams that should be there.
And I think, Dave, we spoke, haven't we, you know, about that, you know, that it's so difficult to admit defeat sometimes. But I think, you know, I mean, you've got to look at the bigger picture. You know that next season's a big season for us, but I look at Sheffield United coming down, the full of Premier League footballers, Luton Town coming down. Yes, it's Luton Town, yes, we're a small football club, but the players and the investment that they've made and brought in, they brought in very good Championship, if not Premier League footballers. You know what I mean? You've got your Ross Barkley's of this world who've done really well. They've got goal scorers are scoring goals. They've got a very good manager, very good coach in terms of where he wants to be and develop himself. And if he takes a step back, he'll push them back up to the Premier League. I believe he will do that because he does seem to be that good. And we run out of spaces because every team comes down with the parachute money with Premier League squads. It takes a gap in terms of who's going to take it. And unless we start heavily investing, you know what I mean? I read that ridiculous story that war chest of 250 million quid on social media.
Who's got that?
Middlesbrough.
We got 250 million quid.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Oh, brilliant.
It was hilarious, yeah. I made sure I didn't retweet and share it because I just thought, is that laughable, whoever wrote that? And like, we're not that football club anymore. You know, we cut our cloth accordingly. And if we can find a gem or two and find that solution to get in the playoffs and hopefully we can sustain something, then that's just the way the model's got to be.
Yeah, I think we've got the basis of an addition team. I think if we had an addition of two, I honestly think we need a biggish centre forward, somebody who puts his weight about and makes himself a nuisance, if you like. And we probably need another midfielder, but the rest of the team is fine.
I think we spoke, haven't we, heavily, Dave, about we definitely need that centre forward. You know, I'd like to see two come in the door. I'd like to see sometimes play one up. I'd like to see probably two play alongside each other, or if not, I'd have a new number 10. And maybe he's another wide player to give us a different dimension, but we need pace. For me,
I'd like you to see put your boots back on actually at the moment.
Need pace, and I look at teams who've punished us this season. Bristol City punished us with pace on the break. Plymouth punished us with pace on the break. Blackburn at times hit us with one or two players at pace. The teams have damaged us, have hit us with pace, and we don't look like we hit teams with pace. We don't look like we've got a pace what can damage, like other teams can seem to damage us. And we need that. You know what I mean? When Jones didn't play, he left a huge hole. Mm. Salmi Silvera is a similar player, but lacks the quality at times in killer areas, final ball, final shot, doesn't score enough goals. You know what I mean? He's still finding his feet, but how long are we going to give him in terms of moving forward? Because it's a catch-22 situation. We do need success next season, in my opinion, and I'd like all the players to jump on that bandwagon, but some players sometimes just don't fit the mould or fit the time and the place for the football club.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, Coventry had Gregas last season, and I thought he was a very good player, and he's gone abroad and now Premiership clubs are looking at him.
Yeah, scoring lots of goals.
Yeah, to buy him back in. But he was a good player, strong and scored goals. Akpom wasn't that strong, actually, but he scored a lot of goals last season. I don't think we're that much short, but we're well short of the Premiership.
Yeah, and it'd be lovely, wouldn't it, to get some more options. I think that's one thing that we've struggled with this year, options. When Josh Coburn got injured, then Lathe Lath got injured, and we lacked options, we lacked a plan B. We sometimes didn't have a plan A. You know, I mean, at times when we didn't have the option up front, and I think sometimes I said on here, I was crying out for Matt Crooks to go and play up front and put himself about and take the pressure off people. And
Matt Crooks was a funny one to let him go, because Matt Crooks is a good Championship player.
Yeah, I'd love to know the methodology behind the decision, if that was personal for him or if that was a deal was already struck with behind closed doors. That, you know what I mean? Because it left a big hole. And how many times this season have we left that hole and just not filled it? Mm. You know, and that's been the problem. We lose good players and don't fill them with anybody.
You know, I see Gordon Jones every week. You maybe don't know Gordon, but Gordon played over 500 games for Middlesbrough before you. And we have a coffee every week. And a couple of weeks ago, he said to me, "Why did Middlesbrough have so many injuries, Jim?" And he said, "Why are they out for so long?" Because when we played, Andy, and I'm a bit older than you, obviously, your worst injury any outfield player got was a cartilage. And your cartilage would be taken out, operated on, taken out, and you'd be back within 6 weeks.
6 or 8 weeks, yeah.
And now they have the modern technology, the dietitians, they have everybody, and we have numerous players with at least two out for the full season.
I've never known a season, especially in Middlesbrough Football Club, where we've had that many injuries and that many serious injuries, the amount of breaks we've had. You know what I mean? Like, metatarsals, it's a broken foot, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like you said, it's the amount of times that you probably didn't know about it back in the day when we played. You just I'm not saying players are soft now, but absolutely not. I think there's that many people now telling you shouldn't play, you can't play, whereas sometimes you just had to get on with it. You had to play through the pain barrier. You had to play for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks until someone else came back, and then you'd have a week or two off to try and recover and get over things. And that would be any injury. That would be a sprain, a strain, a fracture or something. It might be something really serious, but you just had to get on with it.
I mean, you must have got injuries, Andy.
Yeah.
What was the longest time you had out?
I was probably out for about... I ruptured my Achilles. That was probably the most serious one I had.
That's a big one.
And that was 6 months. Yeah, that was probably the worst one I had. And I've known people not come back from that. But that, for me, a complete rupture of a tendon, you know what I mean, is where something comes away from the bone and something comes away from itself. I wasn't out for a full season. I was still able to impact at the start and at the end. I just missed the middle. You know what I mean? So I played my part still. Whereas now you're seeing lads getting injured in pre-season. They're not back till the following Christmas. You know what I mean? So miss a full season. And by the time they get fit, because they're not allowed with sports science, that they've got to play so many games, they've got to train so many days, and it's got to get so many levels. And then by then, you've got an under influx of players, young players coming through. Your career might be threatened by because other players are coming through.
I mean, I'm not blaming the players, because as you rightly said, the players want to play, or they should want to play. Yeah. But it seems that the scientists keep them out for longer than possibly they should be out.
And I think that was probably, and I can only talk personally to me, that I certainly played games when I shouldn't have played. I certainly believe that my career was cut short because I was in that mindset, but that's just part of the way that we had to do it at the time, you know what I mean? Because people put pressure on you. You did it for them. You did it for managers. You did it for players. You did it for yourself. You did it for the fans. I think there's more science involved in terms of the damage you'll do. And when you get to all that kind of damage, that you probably start to think about it and worry about it. Whereas, and there was nobody to tell you what you're going to do or what damage you could do. So you just did it without, regardless.
It was different in my day because we only had small squads. I mean, I dislocated two fingers against Queen's Park Rangers, and the following week I had them strapped up together and played. I didn't miss a match because of it. And I think you're right, players did play through injuries in the old days.
But it's mad, isn't it? The amount of injuries we've had this year, you know, it puts pressure on younger players, it puts pressure on other staff members around the club, like the medical team and other coaches, fitness coaches, sports scientists. You know, that the manager must then start asking questions of why is this happening? You know, look at other clubs, and is training methods right? Are training methods wrong? Is warm-ups correct? Warm-ups wrong? Are the players looking after themselves? You know what I mean? Because the clubs could be doing everything right. You know what I mean? And then the onus is back on players. Yep. You know, it's got to be, it can't just be, is X, Y, and Z doing it right or wrong? You know what I mean? It's a collective part. You know what I mean? Because it's lifestyle, it's training methods, it's recovery, it's a whole package now. You know what I mean? There's no stone unturned in a footballer. They have the best facilities, they have the best equipment. They're looked after, you know. It's
and they're well paid, Andy.
Yeah. They didn't have to warm up at Tollesby Road. They didn't have to get changed in water cabins. They didn't have to run to training. You know, they're very looked after. You know,
didn't have to run up Aston Hills to the gym.
No, well, we didn't do Aston Hills. There's Rosebery Topping and Kirtland Bank. And you know,
Aston Hills was the hardest one I ever did.
We did Kirtland Bank, and looking back on it, you wonder why players didn't go over on ankles, because it's rough going up there and Rosebery Topping. I don't know. We never hardly got any injuries.
I'm surprised.
Amazing.
It's crazy, isn't it? You know, yeah. I mean, listen, and when we talk about that, how much just our club's evolved, you know, that where we've come from and where we are now, you know, and I think the club's in such a good position. We all want that success, you know what I mean? And we want that magic formula. We want to be where Leeds are right now and fighting for that top place. We want to be where Leicester are, that they're hanging on to a league title. But the minute we're just in a position where it's just so precarious and it's worrying in terms of that. The season's just gonna die out in the next could die out in the next 2 weeks.
We've got plenty to chew the cud on. We'll find out more about Jim's book as well. He's not just a legend; he's an author now. So Jim's got his book out. We'll be talking about that. We've got the exclusive with Sammy Silvera. You mentioned Sammy earlier, fellas. Rye from the North East Footy Breakfast Show is out in Sydney right now. I think he's driving home. So he's managed to infiltrate the Socceroos camp and get a chat with Sammy. We'll be hearing from him as well. But we've got to do a few messages. We'll be right back on the Red.
Forget the Maccams. Forget the Mags. Smoggies and Proud. This is the
Red. Oh, there we go. We're back, fellas. A couple of messages because they have been flying in. You can send us your messages. Thank you for doing so on Facebook Live if you're watching on that. You can WhatsApp us. Oh, I've just realised the WhatsApp screen's not open. And we do have a message sitting there as well. Good evening, Dave. What's this one? I'm taking a chance here. Good evening, Dave, Andy and Jim. Can I get a birthday shout out for Ryan Plymouth, who turned 35 on Monday?
Happy birthday, Ryan.
Happy birthday, Ryan. Yeah, happy 35. Just a pup. I never thought I'd ever see myself admitting that. All right, a couple of messages here. All the way from Canada, Stu Gawley. Evening, Jim. When me and my mate were first allowed to go to the match, we sat on the Holgate end wall and chatted with you during the warm-ups. Great to see you. Almost giving my age away here, Dave. So that's from Stu Gawley, who remembers sitting there as a bit of a youngster, chatting. Do you used to chat to people during the warm-ups, Jim?
That's why I didn't get injured.
Yeah.
The warm-up. The
crowd were quite close to you, so. And of course, with me being in goals, and goalkeepers didn't go past the 18-yard line on our day, so you're always close.
The secrets are coming out. Ian Barron says, question for Jim. He's just gone. Sorry, we've just got a ton of messages coming there. I think it was. Well, there it is. The mighty Darlow back. Yeah, we know they are. Where's he gone? There he is. Question for Jim. Best memories from his time at Darlington, and much appreciated for all the work you put in back in the day.
Well, the best memory is getting to the playoff finals and Plymouth actually beat us 1-0. We'd beat Plymouth twice that year, 2-0, home and away. And they beat us, and that was the first time Darlington ever got to Wembley, so that was a big occasion for them.
Yeah, it was a big one. And for the pair of you, Patrick Wheatley says, need to offer Paddy McNair a new contract. What do you think, lads?
I think you do. I think we need the experience. You know, I mean, if we're going to go down the route of bringing younger players in and giving them experience, you know, I mean, there's a lot of young players now who I believe aren't ready. But they need to be playing alongside the experienced players of the Paddies. I think Paddy's a little bit more mobile than probably Johnny Howson is, in my opinion. You know, but he needs to play more games. In order to play games, we probably need to keep the system that we're playing. And I think it's showing his worth, Jim, for me. It's showing that
the biggest problem is, from what I can gather, is Paddy's on one of the top wages, and I don't think Middlesbrough are prepared to pay him that. I don't know, but he's one of the higher paid players, and Middlesbrough trying to keep the wage.
I'll ask you, you're both players, you're both ex-pros. I'll ask you, I mean, if you're coming towards the back end of your career
and the contract's running out, are you immediately thinking, got to get another contract somewhere on the same or better money? Or if a club came to you and went, look, we'll renew for a year, but it's got to be on less wages, would either of you consider that?
It depends on what he's looking for, where he is in terms of his family lifestyle. You know, I mean, if he's settled in the area, for me, it's a no-brainer. That's the first thing. I would probably, you'd probably look at a selfish one and say, I'll take less money, but I want a 2-year contract. You know what I mean? So your contract then is doubled overnight. You know, in terms
so you got some security.
In terms of you got a bit of security, so your longevity in terms of you can drag your career out a little bit longer. The problem that probably clubs have got, we've certainly got, is the United States, probably Saudi Arabia, even Australia, and teams who can just give players who've had a good career a little bit of a payday, and it ruins all the hard work that we're doing, you know, because we can still offer them good contracts and offer them really good money, but they can blow us out the water and offer them something that will set them up for the rest of their life. And, you know, I'd never stop anybody from going to do that, but it ruins the good work that we're trying to do as a football club. And I'm not saying anyone's done that, by the way. I'm not saying Matt Crooks or anybody's done it, but it's just teams are doing it.
Yeah, Crooks he wouldn't have done, because the MLS don't pay huge amounts.
Yeah, they're capped.
I think it's for him, it's more to do with lifestyle.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And I just think we just need to do our business early. And I think we spoke earlier on about signing players last year too late. Don't leave it too late to offer a contract to somebody. You know what I mean? Look at the Akpom saga. You know, if it had just offered maybe as a contract a little bit earlier to somebody, we might not have been in the situation we were in terms of whole getting held to ransom a little bit.
Jim, I know it wasn't in your day, wages weren't ridiculous like we're seeing, but, you know, if you were coming to the end of your spell and the club you were with said, look, it's a 1-year deal but it's on less money, where would your head be as a player? Would you be, I can see it, I can understand it, or would it be, I've got to go and get better elsewhere?
We couldn't have gone elsewhere, Dave.
I suppose you couldn't, could you?
Different nowadays.
Of course
it
was,
when our contract was up, the club held your registration. So unless you did sign another contract and the club wanted to keep you, you just had to sign another contract. So it wasn't the same. But, you know, it's happened a couple of years ago with George Friend. George wanted to stay at Middlesbrough, but I think they only offered him a 1-year contract, and he went to Birmingham for a 2-year contract. In hindsight, George might have been better staying here, but he had a 2-year contract.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think that it's more the security and longevity and trying to drag, especially at certain ages. You can't fault them to drag the career out another year and trying to get that little bit of security and see if there's a, I don't know, potential coaching position at the end of it as well, because I'm guessing, you know what I mean? By the looks of it, he's an international footballer, Paddy. He's had a really good career. He's worked under some very good coaches and managers throughout his life, from United all the way through to where he is now, that he must surely want to pass that experience on from international level all the way down to grassroots, you know, so.
I suppose exactly the same question could be asked of Johnny Howson, can't it, as well? Because, you know, Johnny's come back into the team when he got his chance after the injury, which we thought was a lot worse than it was going to be. And he's, you know, he's certainly played his part in the run that the Borough's currently on, these 4 unbeaten.
No, not totally. I think we're talking about this as well, but you can look at it from probably the other angle. You know what I mean? Playing devil's advocate, that we're asking players to potentially take pay cuts, but then you go and bring a brand new player on mega money. That, how do you feel if the player was took a pay cut? You know, for someone else who's coming in on bigger money. You know, so everyone's got their own worth. Everyone's got their own valuation of themselves, and unfortunately, I think players hold a lot of power, and clubs just have to accept that players now have that much power.
If Paddy is a free agent, he will get a club somewhere on the
100%.
And he'll probably get a huge signing on fee. Yeah. Maybe not as much as what he's getting at Middlesbrough, but weekly wage. But he'll get a signing on fee because he is a free agent.
And I think that's where it becomes a little bit hard for Middlesbrough to take. You know what I mean? Because they've got to be careful what they offer, because I think you're in a real precarious position, that if you don't offer something what is enticing him to sign straight away, he won't come back again. It's a one-time offer thing, I think, with players out of contract, because they'll have been offered contracts from January the 1st at a club X, Y, and Z. So they'll already have these offers on the table, and they're waiting for the club to come in with the offer. You know what I mean? And then you might get a counter offer, and then by the time you know it, you're playing 2 or 3 clubs against each other. The player's the one with the power and the one who makes that crucial decision.
Just catch up with a few more messages, and then I want to find out more about the book, Jim, because it looks pretty good to me. Patrick Wheatley's been on, playoffs have gone, too many good teams above us. I did say we needed Kiefer Moore. He would have been great for us.
because he would have just scored goals. Stu, goalie playoffs were done once we had 12 missing players on the sick. We'll get into some more of these, and there's many more there. But Jim, the book, you're an author. Goalkeeper extraordinaire, legend, and now author.
I wouldn't say that. I
just good with your hands, Jim, aren't you? Good with your hands. Save balls and write these books.
Writing, typing, saving.
And loads of people asked me to do an autobiography, and I said no. But it's 50 years since we won promotion, and I thought it was a nice time to...
Sadly,
to,
I remember.
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you what, I had to go down to the library to look at the old pink gazettes to find out who scored the goals and what happened in the matches, because it's a long time away, long time ago.
Grey matter, tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a copy there, haven't you? Your camera's there. If you want to just hold it up so people get to recognise it. I mean, it's not just a book, Andy. It's almost like a novel. I mean, it's hugely thick. There you go. You can see it. Brilliant.
Yeah, I've dedicated it to the three players that played in that team that are no longer with us, which is Willie Madden, Bobby Murdoch, and David Armstrong.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, they were three great players, and I've put them in the back along with Jack, you know. I mean, I just opened up a page over the 42 games. We're only 2 points for a win. We got 65 points, which today would be 92. And the championship was won by the biggest margin in any Division 2 season by 15 points. We won the championship with 6 matches to play. We were promoted with 7 matches to play. We scored 77 goals with 25 clean sheets, which is more important than to me.
Is it Luton Town where we secured promotion?
Yeah, it's a funny one, Luton Town, because
Oxford and Luton,
were second in the league and we were first. And if we'd have beat Luton, Luton had to beat us because they needed the points to go up. Once we beat them, we couldn't be caught. Yeah. And that was around about Easter.
So was that was promotion? Was Luton promotion or Luton was the title?
That was the championship. We got promotion the week before.
Now, was that Oxford?
At home to Oxford. Yeah,
I remember. I was at both games. Because we went down on the train, Andy. Well, we went down on the league line.
Who scored in the 2 matches, if you remember then?
Milsey?
Milsey scored away to Luton, yes.
Yeah, Milsey scored at Luton. Oxford, my goodness.
Talking the Manor Ground as well.
Now you're asking. No, it was Oxford was at home, wasn't it?
No, Oxford at home, yeah.
Yeah, Luton was away. I can't remember who scored.
Yeah, we haven't got all day. David Armstrong.
Spike.
Yeah.
Spike, okay. I mean, you've followed on from this. As a you're a Teesside lad.
Yeah.
Are you aware when you're coming through as a young player? Are you aware of the previous history of the club?
I wanted to emulate exactly what I watched at Ayrton Park. You know that I was very fortunate. You know,
you can't watch these guys though.
I didn't watch Jim. I watched.
No,
I didn't watch Jim. I watched. Obviously,
I'm old enough.
I watched Bernie. I watched Proc. I watched Colin Cooper. I watched Parky. Yeah. Watched all those guys. You know what I mean? Seeing how successful they were under Bruce and see all the success we had, you know, that.
Did you play Ayrton Park, Andy?
No, so my first season was at the Riverside, so I was a schoolboy when we played Luton last game of the season when we beat them 2-1 to get promoted when John scored both the goals. And I remember those guys. I've got photos on my wall of in the house of those kind of moments, you know, that I'm at Bernie standing on the Holgate when he scored against United. I've got bits of the Holgate at home. You know what I mean? I'm a super fan. You know what I mean? Forget that I played for the club. I wanted to emulate. Probably one of my regrets that I didn't play the whole game. And Scott, sorry, just played the Ayrton Park and scored the whole game. I would have loved to have done that. But the club went into a different route. Went down the Riverside route. My first year was at the Riverside. And listen, the club was a different club. Going down a different route, spending loads of money, bringing in the kind of players they did. I can't grumble, you know what I mean? But being the fan that I was and going to away games and going to home games with my dad, it was just a dream come true, you know, to then meet these kind of people and meet yourself and talk about the good times and the bad times, because being a football fan and being a player, you know, it's not all rosy, it's not all good, it's not all nice. No.
There were some bad times under Charlie Amos, so it wasn't all good.
I think being a Middlesbrough fan, you've had more bad times than good times,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. And I think that makes our club, you know what I mean? You listen to what people say about Man City and those kind of teams. You know what I mean? That they've had loads of negatives, but the positive they had blow that out the water now. You know, we've had some success, but then we've had so many years in the doldrums and so many looking at neighbour clubs, at Sunderland doing well, Newcastle doing well, and even Hartlepool and Darling that time's having success. You know, and it's been really difficult and sharing grounds with clubs, and it's just been a real roller coaster. And But I think sometimes when you're that close to a club and you have an affiliation like we do, you know what I mean? And that's two people who from the area and someone who's got an affiliation gym because you obviously love the area because obviously you've lived here that long. It's just so pleasing because I think that's one club that I've seen more than any club, you know what I mean? That Jim's been here for years because he's just fell in love with the place. Bernie's done it. Yeah. Other players have done it. It's mad that more people seem to do it here than at any other club that I've known and played for.
Why did you stay, Jim?
Good question.
I mean, council and plan.
Well, good question.
Yeah, because I wanted to be in Middlesbrough Council.
Good line.
My wife comes from here, you know, and I mean, when I was over here, I've spent more time in England than I have in Northern Ireland living.
Yeah.
So this is my home. I mean, I fell in love with Middlesbrough because I played nearly 500 games for them. And that particular year we got promotion, you know, they hadn't got promotion since 1950 odd. So it was like 20 odd years before they got promotion. And no, Ayrton Park used to hold 42,000 when I played. It used to hold 50 before me, but before they built the stand behind the ghost of the 1966 World Cup. And we've played there with 40,000, and now Middlesbrough have 32,000, I think it is, hold 32,500. And the FA Cup in our day was magic.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember playing against Barnsley, and Barnsley were in the second division, we were in the first division. And there was something like 32,000 people in the crowd. And we won 1-0. We were lucky, actually. I saved us that day. But I mean, that was the magic of the FA Cup going back years. And I think the magic of the FA Cup is gone. I mean, we used to train on the Monday because the draw for the FA Cup used to be on a Monday. And I don't know where you played. But it used to be on the Monday. And it wasn't on TV. It was on the radio. So we were looking for a radio to hear who we were drawn against.
Yeah.
You couldn't find a radio, so somebody had a radio in the car you had to tune it into. And sometimes you would get good reception or not, and then you would hear, and you would wait till Middlesbrough was called out first so you'd be home. And that was the magic of the FA Cup, and you had replays, of course. It was just, the FA Cup was magic back then.
Was it still the same when you were playing? Or had the changes come in to take the gloss off a little?
In terms of the FA Cup, I think listen, when I grew up, I was one of those ones. I used to love FA Cup final day.
Oh, yeah.
I watched St. Greavesy. I watched it from 9 o'clock in the morning, the players having breakfast, to leaving the hotel, all the goals. Greavesy. You know what I mean? I loved it. And then when you're playing, I think that it becomes a different way of looking at it, you know. And I think it was got a little bit more serious. I think clubs didn't take it seriously. You know? Yeah. I don't think they cared about it because the league and Champions League and other areas just took precedent, really, and I think it was such a shame, you know what I mean? People putting lesser sides out.
Because of money, Andy.
Yeah, I think it was, and personally, when we got there, it was a real high, you know. But then it's few and far between, you know, because it's so hard to get there, and then the moment doesn't go the way you want it, and then next season you won't get beaten the first round or the third round at the time, you know what I mean? So it's just so cutthroat football. Yeah. It doesn't seem to have the same effect, you know. If you ask a big CEO of a Premier League team which is the biggest cup competition they want to win, you're talking Premier League or Champions League, and then you're talking what next, they probably won't answer because it wouldn't say FA Cup because it doesn't matter. You know, if you don't win those two, the rest are irrelevant, you know what I mean, because they don't get you anywhere. You're potentially going to pick injuries up because you might not get a Champions League spot because of it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, has a huge impact now.
We got into all this reminiscing with the book, so let's finish the chat with the book. So what's in it, Jim? What's the book about?
Well, it's about that particular season, and I start off by telling people how I came to come to Middlesbrough, and then I highlight every match. As I say, I went to the library and there was a gentleman had all the pink cassettes, which he loaned me, so I found out the results and who scored. And I got man of the match 3 times, I believe it or not. David Mills got it quite a few times. He even got it when we drew nil each somewhere, and I'm saying, well, how the hell did he get it? Why not me, you know?
Because he can't have nil-nil, surely.
Yeah, away from home.
And like giving Andy Campbell it.
But as I said, David was easy on the eye, and he was a good-looking lad, and he worked very hard, so he was easily recognisable. But anyway, I had to go to the library. Well, this gentleman loaned me all the pinks, but the midweek matches wasn't in the pink, so I had to go to the library to get the midweek matches. And it was interesting to read Cliff Mitchell was back then, did the report in the Gazette. So it was reporting all the matches, and then there was a little bit at the end about our first year in the first division when we played Liverpool, Man United, etc. And a little bit about my international career, and that's it.
All right. Okay. And if people want to get it, how can they get their hands on the book?
They have to email my wife and not me, because she's the secretary. And it's sharonplatt@me.com, and we'll post it out if you want to post it out.
Give us it again.
Yeah, Sharon Platt, all one word.
Sharon Platt.
Sharon Platt, Sharon, at me.com,
me.com.
But I had a signing session in the football club before the Blackburn match. I hope to have another one before the end of the season.
And they're going well?
Yeah, they were quite expensive. And I got them printed locally.
You did this all yourself, didn't you?
Another gentleman helped me with all the... I mean, these people have so much memorabilia in Middlesbrough. It's unbelievable what they have. And this gentleman helped me. He's all the programmes of all the matches and everything. The lad called David Harnby. So the two of us did it between us. I did the writing and he did all the rest. And neither of us are recognised authors, by the way, or writers. We're not professionals. So it's been proofread. So I don't think there's any mistakes. But please don't think we're professionals.
We might as well give it a and we'll give it a final plug. It's 25 quid a book, isn't it?
Yeah,
25 quid, and it's thick. I mean, it's
283 pages.
Yeah. 283 pages. There you go. Of what was an incredible Borough season. Tell you what, quick break. We'll be right back, and we'll chat more footy across Teesside on the Red.
The North East Footy Breakfast.
What do you reckon, mate? What do you reckon? Are we going to get there? Are we going to get there? Number one, or what?
Pep saying that buses cause injuries to his players as well.
You're standing in front of them.
That's what he's.
You think Jim Bourne has given him his bus fare?
It's talking about the Relief Donut Ring Cushion. It is a high-density latex donut-shaped pain relief seat cushion. However...
Dear God.
Sitting for long periods on a low-quality ring cushion is not recommended.
Start your day with the North East Footy Breakfast, Monday to Friday, 7 till 9, right here.
On DAB Radio, online, and smart speakers.
This is The Red.
It is Andy Campbell live with Red Army on The Red. We're on Facebook Live as well. Plenty of messages, fellas. Let me just rattle through a few. Ian Barron, who is our traditional Darlow fan who watches everything we do. My stepdad, Stephen Holbrook, played for Hull City and Darlington in the early 70s. There was only one sub then. Oh, how times have changed.
David, are they worried though that Steve Watson's going to leave? How good a job he's doing?
What a job. I mean, he's flying, whether you keep an eye on Darlow as well, Jim, still, but what a job that Watto's done.
Yeah, now, do you know what? Absolutely credit to them, because we spoke about the mistakes that
they're out to make.
I know, and do you know what? They need to continue though. Don't think the job's done, because this is the business end of the season now. You know that if you have a couple of bad games and you can get dragged into it again, they just need probably three or four more wins, big wins, and they can.
I think if they wouldn't have changed the manager, they would have.
They were down.
Yeah, they were. I mean, there's arguments that the chairman didn't change soon enough. Yeah. But
and it might not be soon enough yet. You know, I mean, hopefully Steve can carry on, because he's doing a fabulous job. So. If you are listening, Steve, please.
We keep trying to get him on the breakfast show. He says yes, but he's not been on yet. But there you go. We love you, Steve, honest. Trevor Charville, players had to play through the pain barrier years ago. Nowadays, they have a scratch in their head for 6 weeks. players need the appearance needed the appearance money years ago. Now they don't need to. Now appearance money doesn't mean anything. Now that's a point, Jim. Appearance money, how important was it to the players in your day?
It was important. I mean, my first wage was £30 a week, and I was on £15 appearance money if I got into the first team, and it was £10 a point, so it was 20 quid if you won. So if you're in the first team and you won, you doubled your wages. But it's not fair to say that the players get too much money and they don't play because of the money. I think if you're a professional footballer, you want to play every week.
Mm. No, I totally agree. Listen, it's there's nothing.
You
want
30 quid a week.
There's nothing better to play. My first wage when I was at YTS, I was on £37.50.
Nice.
Went up to £42.50. So I got a good pay rise in my second year. But we were on, what were we getting? We got £25 to play for the reserves.
Yeah.
And we got £8 to play for the youth team. And we got first team bonuses if you got
a. So you even got appearance money in the youth team and the reserves?
Yeah. Oh, right, you know, okay. It gives you an incentive to go and want to play. Listen, mm-hmm. I'd play on the Saturday for the youth team. I'd play on the Wednesday for the reserves, sit on the bench. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to play every game. I wanted to impress everybody. And, you know, I mean, to impress Gordon was key for me. Impress Dave Geddes, then Gordon, Ron Bourne. Mm. And then impress Vivian, the manager. You know what I mean? You just want to play. You know what I mean? I'd never ever played with anybody or came across anybody as a footballer at the time that didn't want to play football. Mm. There's too many horror stories now that people are just happy to not be in that 25-man squad or not happy to play football. And I can understand why fans get angry with footballers, because it's such a niche position. They're in such a lucky position in the lifestyle that go and play. You know what I mean? Because football doesn't last forever. Go and enjoy every moment, because when you don't play, you miss it. So much.
Phil Batch says the playoffs were gone a long time ago. We've just been hanging on to hope, which was never a reality. Another rebuild needed in the summer. House and McNair out of contract. Glover Barlas, a Dykes deal sold. Thomas Greenwood sent back. Ayling and O'Brien signed on. Two strikers and a midfielder needed. And a left side attacking forward. There you go. He's got it. Just for
is that is that our new is that the new director of football?
Yeah. Phil's got it sorted.
We didn't talk about O'Brien there. O'Brien will be on a Premiership wage.
Yeah, he will.
Yeah, totally. Well, the thing is, he's come from a Premier League team. Yeah. He's a Premier League
player. And Ayling will be on a decent screw because he was a Premier League player with Leeds.
Yeah, and I think, and listen, it's finding the right options and making sure the right players, because if you're paying a player top dollar, you need an outcome from him. You need him to play week in, week out, and you need him to stay fit, and you need him to make sure that they're doing it, because you don't mind those type of players. And I'll probably use Jamie Vardy as a prime example in the Championship, that he scored some crucial goals at crucial times, and he could and probably will send Leicester back to the Premier League. So he's done his job. Leicester have got the financial now back out of him, you know. Whereas at the minute, getting value for money from players doesn't always work out.
Here's a comment. I'll angle it towards Jim because it's about keepers. Mark Knott says, "We seem to have lost the conveyor belt of academy keepers. Is there any in the pipeline that you know of, Jim?"
Well, we have two out in loan, I think, haven't we?
There's one in Scotland. He's gone to Scotland. Yeah. He's in Leighton Orient or something. He's supposed to be good.
And there's one down. Forgive me for not remembering where he is, but he got player of the year. Slobrin.
Yeah,
he got player of the year last year, wherever he was, and he went to another team this year.
In Scotland, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and then we signed the lad for 32. And I mean, it's nice to go out and play for another team and get that experience behind you, but sooner or later you've got to say, is it good enough for the first team, or do we sell them on and get somebody else?
Mm-hmm. The problem you've got with goalkeepers, I think, especially in 2024, is Premier League teams need English goalkeepers to sit on the bench or be in squad players, because they make up the quarter of English players. So you're getting a very, very, very good goalkeeper who's quite content and happy just to sit in his backside and not play, because he's on a good thing, he's on a good wage. The clubs need him to fill a quarter of English players. It creates a monster, because then the standard of goalkeepers then down the leagues is lesser and is poor. You know, we've been very lucky at the club. You know what I mean? Like, going back, you've got Jim. You know what I mean? I'm going back to when I watched. You've got Stephen Pears. You know what I mean? We've got Mark Swarter and Mark Crosley. You know, we've been inundated with some top goalkeepers.
And even when we take keepers on loan, we get the likes of Shea Given.
Yeah,
decent keeper. We had Valdez, decent keeper in his time. I know he didn't go down too well with the fans while he was here.
The stripes, and he's got a reputation because he's had a very, very good career. But we need to get back to that. You know what I mean? But I think it's very difficult to pinpoint those kind of areas. And it's the same with centre forwards. You know what I mean? Some centre forwards and the Dwight Gales of this world, the Kiefer Moves of this world, they ain't going to drop down and take 20, 30 grand a week less than what they're getting to sit on the bench. They will happily sit on the bench and pick up the kind of wages that they're picking up, and that's the life and times of a modern day footballer.
A couple of more comments. Ian, our Darlow fan's been back on for Jim. I was at the old Wembley in 96 versus Plymouth as a Darlington fan. Ronnie Meg? How do you pronounce his
Ronnie
name?
Ronnie Morge.
A bit like Target. That's an American joke. Set piece goal in front of 55,783 memories. And get well soon, Mogger. That's from Ian as well, absolutely. What a team that was, says Stu Gawley. Obviously, we've been talking about Borough teams of the past. Trevor Charvel, can you give us a link to buy Jim's book, please. So we'll sort that out, Jim. We'll send a message through and get it through. Phil says, football for me is gone. League Cup and FA Cup are lost. Money has taken over and ruined our beautiful game. Take me back to Ayresome Park any day. Back in the 80s. That was before your time, mate. He doesn't want to go back to your time. He wants to go earlier. Yeah. I'll take that as a personal slight, I would. Stu Gawley, how would you... Oh, he's gone. Hang on a second. How would you get hold of a signed copy of the book from over here? Can you get one over to British Columbia in Canada, Jim?
Oh, probably, but it would cost quite a few. I mean, I was trying to send one to my son in Australia, and it was £30 to post it to Australia.
Just to post it. It'll be about the same then, Canada.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit cheaper. Stu, you've got to dig deep, mate. That seems to be the message. Let's have a look here. Trevor Charvel, Platt. Mate, I'm in absolute heaven here. I really am, because he's just listed the team: Platt, Craggs, Spraggan, Souness, Boehm, Madron, Murdoch, Mills, Hickton, Foggan, Armstrong, subs. Oh, it just says sub actually. Brian. We did have Mally Smith as well. What a team! Great times to be a Borough fan. 73-74. Does that bring the memory back? Back, Jim. Just rattling through that.
Well, I mean. I know them all, and there's a photograph in front of us. I mean, and we do keep in touch with each other. We're all getting old. Fortunately, three of us have passed away, and a couple of us are not too well at the moment.
Yeah. Well, we wish them well.
It's a group of players on and names which any Middlesbrough fan even I know all of them, because my dad's obviously brought me up on them, you know. Obviously I was quite lucky that Frank Spraggan used to live in Martin. I don't know if he still does. He used to live in Martin, so I used to see him all the time.
Still does.
I used to see him all the time. So it's those kind of things, you know. Obviously, you always get talking, and obviously he knew my history, and obviously knew I was going into the club and stuff. So it was always nice, you know, because you as a player, you always know the history, or you should know the, in my opinion, you should know the history of your football club. Mm. And if you don't, you've got to get up in it very quickly.
League Cup semi-final, two legs, Man City. Were you playing in that game, Jim?
Yeah, of course I was.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm just what I do is Craigsy's going to run after me. He might have a bad knee now, but he's going to run after me for what I remember is him letting that one slip under his foot. But
I don't remember that. I remember we won the first leg 1-0, and we still fancied our chances down there because we didn't let many goals in. And we're 2-0 down after 10 or 15 minutes.
And that first one was, I think, Craigsy let, he thought it was going out for a goal kick. And then
just before half time, David Armstrong rounded the goalkeeper and hit the post. If it had won them 2-1, they come out the second half and scored two quick goals. It was 4-0. It was over.
Yeah. Well, there
sounds
you go.
Sounds like Chelsea this year,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it? But they did six, not four. Let's not go there. Quick mention here. It's Richard Jones. He says, Jim Platt, what a legend. That's all he says. So Richard, obviously, obviously Jim appreciates what you did for the Borough. Stu Gawley says, I will dig deep, so we'll sort out getting a book across to Canada as well. So Ian Aikenhead says, love watching Jim and all the Borough back in the 70s, all the best. And Gordon Rees, Jim's looking really well, looking forward to getting his new book. My number one Borough keeper, best Borough keeper for all time for me.
Gordon's most favourite player is John Hickton, but I know that.
You know that?
Gordon Rees is his favourite player is John Hickton.
Yeah, he's saying best Borough team of all time. The names just roll off your tongue. You're getting slighted all the time, mate. You're getting hammered here. They're not mentioning you.
I'm quite happy and content here. I'm a super fan, I'm happy.
And my first game, this is Phil, my first game was versus Wolves in the FA Cup quarter-final, 1-1, I think. Cochrane equalised from Andy Gray. So we're bringing back all the memories, fellas. We're just about out of time. It's your show, mate, but I just want to thank Jim for coming in.
Oh, it's been amazing. It's always nice to reminisce and have players on who've got that love for the club. You know what I mean? Having an ex-player on is always great, but having someone who's got an affiliation with the area and has that love for the town and for the area and for the club and for each other, I think is even more special and key for me, because it shows what a family we've got, you know what I mean? And the comments alone just speak for themselves, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And it'll happen, mate, in another 10 years when you're in here. People are going, Andy Campbell, what a legend.
Best centre forward we've ever had.
Just reeling the names off the tongue. Yeah. Campbell, Musto, Fleming. Because...
Hey, some good players, hey. There, mate. Hey, some good players. Jim, been a pleasure. I'll get Sharon's. I'll confirm Sharon's email with you when we're finished now. We're off air in 6 seconds, and anybody who wants a copy of the book can get in touch with us here at the radio station, and we'll pass it on and we'll get those to you as well. So, fellas, thank you, Andy. Next week, thank you very much. Same time, pleasure. same place, same channel.
See you here.
Indeed. We'll catch you then. See you.
Teesside and proud. This is the